cuts in on the right foot, launches a golazo!
It's time for Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Tune in as Jason Longshore gives you insight and analysis on the beautiful game, including headlines from around the world of soccer.
Rebound, score!
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight, brought to you by your local Ford dealer, and brought to you in part by Michelob Ultra, official beer sponsor of FIFA World Cup 26.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game. Here's Jason Longshore.
Let's kick it. Atlanta Soccer Tonight is live on 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app. Just a couple of minutes late. The Georgia Bulldogs tried to have a little bit of a comeback late in the College World Series. It is double elimination, so they've got another shot at it, which changes our schedule tomorrow. We'll be with you at 6 o'clock tomorrow. As usual on these 10 o'clock-ish shows, we'll be on the radio until 11, just before 11. So if you're listening on the radio or if you're listening on the Odyssey app and you want to continue the conversation afterwards, or you just want to jump into the chat on YouTube just while we're going, go for it. Go to the 92.9 The Game YouTube page, youtube.com/929TheGame. And join the conversation. You can join the conversation with me. I'm Jason Longshore and with Madison Cruz, who's riding shotgun tonight. What's up, Maddie?
Back again. I'm excited. I mean, we thought we had a really fun day of World Cup action, didn't we?
Well, we haven't had a win yet in the World Cup today. Three draws. And of course, the game that is at halftime right now between New Zealand and Iran is level at 1-1. We've had all the chaotic things, though, and it started with where we were earlier today. Atlanta Stadium, I almost said it. I'll try to abide by the rules for the World Cup. We were at Atlanta Stadium. It was an amazing, historic day for the World Cup, for Atlanta hosting its first World Cup match, and for one of the smallest countries to ever be at a World Cup, Cabo Verde. Their World Cup debut, they get a point against the team that I picked to win the whole tournament, Spain. A lot of people were with me on that train. They absolutely still could. Remember, Argentina lost their first game to Saudi Arabia in 2022. So anything can happen. The Spanish media would disagree with that right now, Maddie, because the hyperbole coming out of Madrid and Barcelona and Valencia, it is very loud and it's in a lot of capital letters. And it's going to be on the front of a lot of newspapers that might be probably being printed right about now and being distributed. So what did you take away from Cabo Verde getting a scoreless draw with Spain?
I can safely say, even from this morning and, you know, getting ready, even talking on the morning shift too, with everyone here on 92.9, I kind of thought that Spain would come out on top. I think Cabo Verde is a very good team. I think it's a very good team. I thought that a lot of people coming in thinking that it was going to be almost like a Germany and a Curacao. Yeah. I didn't believe it. I didn't think that would be the case. But I did think that Spain would get the win. I thought they would come out with 3 points. But I will say, as someone, and Jason, as you know me, I really do like to highlight and really like to praise and talk about, especially defenders, center backs, back lines defensively. I know when we always use the phrase defense win championships in soccer, you know, that doesn't really factor in. It does, but it also doesn't, because you have to score goals to win games as well. I think in this matchup, though, the way that Cabo Verde played this game and the way that their identity is, this is a defensively organized team. And you look at some of the stats, 27 shots, 74% possession for Spain, over 800 passes for Spain. But, I mean, weren't able to find the back of the net. I think when you look at those, you think, oh, well, Spain dominated. Spain did this. I mean, they had Cabo Verde right on their heels. They didn't. Cabo Verde was completely fine defending every single moment that was coming their way. There were a couple of moments of maybe, frantic moments, but I thought Cabo Verde, I mean, they are defensively organized. They are a very, very strong team. They're a team that is able to handle the mental moments in those and being able to handle not being able to be on the front foot a lot of times in the games. And they they held their own. They held their own against a really strong Spain side, and Spain just couldn't find the back of the net.
Yeah, it creates a conversation because, I mean, who did dominate the game? Like, I can come up with 10 different things to tell you that Spain dominated the game. And I can also tell you that Cabo Verde knew that was going to happen and they were prepared for it. And it kind of goes back to the post-game comments from the two coaches. Luis De La Fuente, now, he warned everybody yesterday that Cabo Verde was a very good team, a very organized team. We reiterated it here on AST last night. I told you in the build-up to this tournament, I told you in the build-up to this game, that this is not your average debutant in Cabo Verde. They were a very good defensive team in African qualifying. They got past Cameroon, which is never easy. This is a good team. Now, I think they're limited in the attack, and that's going to be a problem for them the later you go. The last tournament that was won by a team that was purely defensive was Greece in the Euros in 2004. It's just really hard to win the games you have to win later in the tournament if you can't score goals consistently. But you can get out of the group playing this way. And I think Cabo Verde can get out of this group, especially with what other results we've seen today. We'll talk about those in the next segment. I think when you get into this match, what I keep coming back to is Spain had a lot of the ball. Spain pinned Cabo Verde in, and you could say Cabo Verde willingly allowed themselves to be pinned in. But Spain didn't create enough danger out of that. And the crazy number that Opta's never had happened before since they've been tracking these things, going back to the 1966 World Cup. The starting striker for Spain, Mikel Oyarzabal, no touches in the first 30 minutes. Zero. You couldn't find him in the first 30 minutes. That shouldn't happen. And I thought the last 15 minutes of the first half, Spain got better. I thought Pedri got more involved. He got between the lines. He created some danger. But then the rest of the way, with Cabo Verde at times defending with a line of six and three midfielders in front of that, as the wingers drop back to help defend, you'd see Pedri get higher up the field. You'd see Rodri pop up on the left wing. You'd see Fabian Ruiz pop up next to the forward trying to create something. And they just couldn't until Lamine Yamal checked in. And that's when things started to turn, it felt like, for a little while. He was dangerous on the dribble, as you would expect. He created opportunities pretty quick with his involvement. I think he showed his rust as his time on the field went. He played, what, a little over 20 minutes maybe? And the later it got, the more he struggled because he hasn't played a competitive game in a couple of months now. But Cabo Verde did everything that they had to do against a team that is better and against a team that's the defending European champions. I think you have to, in my opinion, give Cabo Verde more credit than you yell at Spain. That's how I felt coming out of that game.
I agree with you. And I mean, obviously the conversation and a lot of the headlines are going to be, oh, Spain couldn't find the win. Spain couldn't do this. Spain couldn't do that. Instead,
you want some of the headlines?
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
AS called it a shipwreck, which is kind of funny because Cabo Verde does have a lot with the coast and all that.
That's funny.
Marca called it a disaster. AS also described Spain as soulless and powerless. Mundo Deportivo called it catastrophic. Sport said Spain lacked clarity. That's the nicest thing they've said. The manager, the players came out of it. They weren't panicking, at least publicly. They weren't happy and didn't really say a whole lot to the media, but that's understandable after a draw like this.
Yeah.
I really feel like it was more of a story of Cabo Verde being better than Spain being bad. Spain wasn't great, but Cabo Verde was great in what they did, and I think they have to be given credit.
I think so too, and I think that's why you're seeing a couple more of those publications. I think there should be more of an emphasis on it. I think because, again, Cabo Verde had a game plan. They know the way that they're going to play. They know their strengths, and they completely leaned into it, and they didn't once waver from it too, especially in a match like that. We talk about it all the time, and even when we talk about field positioning, we talked a lot with the U.S. men's national team. Spain had a ton of it. Spain completely pinned Cabo Verde into their defensive third. Almost the entirety of the game was played in the defensive third for Cabo Verde and the Blue Sharks. But you never saw the shoulders drop. You never saw heads being hung low. You never saw that from Cabo Verde. It was always, all right, get back into it. Let's go. There were so many times when they would be able to find a breakthrough in the attack. And immediately after you had Spain able to collect it, they were able to regain possession there. Immediately, everybody signaling, get back. Everybody staying organized, getting back to the shape, getting back to what they need to do because they know the game plan. I think it's a credit to the organization of what Cabo Verde can do. And honestly, with Bobista and what he's done over there, being able to get everybody on the same page with it, because that is so difficult in this system too, because you want the ball. You want to be able to go forward. You want to be able to break through. Cabo Verde had a couple of moments. They just couldn't find the back of the net. That's going to be something going forward. I'm curious to see. But that's a credit to Bobista and the Blue Sharks and being able to still hold on to that structure and being able to completely commit to it as well.
We got to talk about the goalkeeper for Cabo Verde before we go to break. Vocinha, 40 years old. He plays in the Portuguese second division. He's valued at 40,000 euro on the transfer market. 89 caps, was nominated for the 2025 African Goalkeeper of the Year Award. I saw the Senegal media, one of their outlets that covers the Senegal national team. Senegal knocked Cabo Verde out of the qualifying for 2018. That was the first time that Cabo Verde got really close to qualifying. They hadn't played in World Cup qualifiers for very long before that, but they got close, and Vocinha was in goal. And the Senegal outlet that I was reading was talking about how upset he was at the end of that because, and I guess some of the things he said after was he felt like that was his chance. That was his opportunity to go to a World Cup. He was 32. He thought, I'm not going to get this chance again. 8 years later, in game one in World Cup history for Cabo Verde, he has a worldie and makes some outstanding saves and was just so impressive all the way around at 40 years old.
I mean, first of all, I think I was at halftime. I think you told me that he was 40 years old, and I didn't believe you. I was like, what? I was like, no way, especially with the way he was playing. I mean, he was incredible. And I also, again, when we talk about backlines, we talk about defense, especially in football. I think when you look at a goalkeeper, I think we're going to talk about his saves. We're going to talk about the moments that he did have, but it's the way he led the team as well. You saw every moment he was able to hold on to the ball. He was being commanding in his box, in his 18, even when the play was happening ahead of him too. He was all over that, and that's what you need. And I mean, you saw the emotion after the game from him. I mean, in tears. I mean, celebrating with the entire team. I mean, that's what this is about. That's what the World Cup is about. Moments like that, you know, getting the chance to see the entirety of Atlanta Stadium at the end of the game start to chant and root for Cabo Verde in the end to try to find something. That's what this is about. Like that honestly, to me, I don't think it hit me that the World Cup was actually here in our backyard. I think until that moment, I think I just started laughing at one point because I was like, this is unbelievable. This is insane. And we got to witness it. That's incredible.
Crazy day at the Benz / Atlanta Stadium. We'll talk more about that match here in just a little bit, but we'll get you caught up on everything else that's happened in the tournament today as well. Iran and New Zealand, 51st minute, still 1-1 in that one out in Los Angeles. Every other game today finished as a draw, but some interesting tales to tell. We'll do that on the other side of the break. It's Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Into the back of the net! Goal!
Back to more of Atlanta Soccer Tonight
with Jason Longshore.
Welcome back, Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Been a wild day at the World Cup, and Madison Cruz and I are trying to make sense of it. Didn't even get to what's on tap, which is brought to you as always by our friends at Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of FIFA World Cup 26. It kind of sets the scene for what we're going to talk about here in the segment as well, because Group H has turned into sheer chaos, just like the match that's going on right now has, as New Zealand adds a second goal. They're up 2-1 on Iran. The Argentines celebrating Tim Payne are probably very excited at the moment because they've adopted New Zealand. We'll talk about this one in a minute. But Group H has turned chaotic as well. It is the second group now in the tournament, and we'll see what happens with this game tonight. It's the second group that has everybody on 1 point because later in the day, after Cabo Verde got their historic draw, Uruguay and Saudi Arabia finished in a 1-1 draw. So what's on tap in Group H is Spain back here in Atlanta on Sunday to play Saudi Arabia, who looked much better than I expected. Cabo Verde, who looked much better than anybody in the world expected, they are playing Uruguay in Miami, which today was a heavy Spain crowd, but it wasn't exclusively Spain. In Miami, it was pretty much exclusively Uruguay. So I am curious to see how the Cabo Verdeans make their way to South Florida for that game on Sunday. I think that's the 6 o'clock game on Sunday. The game here with Spain and Saudi Arabia is at noon. As big as match day one was in this group, match day two will be even bigger and crazier. But let's talk about the rest of the day in the World Cup today. Belgium 1-1 with Egypt. It was Mo Salah's birthday. He turned 34 today. Set up Egypt's goal, picked out Emin Ashour on the edge of the box. He took a touch, drove it low into the bottom left. First international goal for Ashour. Egypt's fastest ever World Cup goal. Salah has 3 goal contributions in his 3 career World Cup matches. Pretty good birthday present to himself. But Belgium were unbeaten in their last 7 World Cup openers before tonight, and they found a way to stay unbeaten. It wasn't pretty, but they get the goal from Romelu Lukaku in the 66th minute. He comes off the bench in the 66th minute, and then he's involved in creating an own goal. Mohamed Hani puts it into the back of the net. Pretty good substitution appearance for Lukaku. Belgium couldn't find a winner. De Bruyne hit the outside of the post with a free kick late. I mean, it's kind of a tough one to read, Maddie, because Egypt, to me, was very disappointing in the African Cup of Nations earlier in the year. They've always been that team that has a lot of talent but doesn't produce anything. I put Egypt and Cote d'Ivoire in that category often, where they have so much talent and they don't win as much as you kind of think that they would. But this is a good result against a good Belgium team that's in the top 10. Even if they're older and this golden generation hasn't been as golden as people thought it would be, Belgium came in as the favorite for a reason, and they didn't leave as the favorite. They didn't look good enough to get the win.
I feel like it's interesting, especially with today, you're getting a lot of those results where you think it's going to go one direction and then you're proven, I think, completely wrong in another. I feel like that's kind of in the nutshell too, but hey, it's the World Cup. Anything can happen. I mean, if a team is getting hot at the right time, then they're getting hot, and that's going to help them, I think, especially as you continue out the rest of the group stage. I think for Egypt, you're riding high on this result, especially you're able to find the opening goal. Belgium's able to come back and get the equalizer, obviously, but you're able to hold them still. You don't allow them to find the second. And now you move in with 1 point. And also, again, it's 1-2 with a lot of these matches being so even. I mean, it's a battle. I think especially for Belgium, you know, and my dad's not going to like this because he had Belgium kind of as his little dark horse, I think, riding through. And I don't know how he feels about this performance. I haven't had the chance to call him and talk to him about it. So that'll be a tomorrow thing. But yeah, I mean, it's one where I was also kind of shocked too. I mean, especially with the way Belgium played against the U.S. back in Atlanta in March, I was like, oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, this is a team to watch out for. And I don't know if you saw that today.
No, I don't think he did. I don't think he saw enough from them. I expect more. It wasn't good enough. It wasn't really good enough for Uruguay either in the third game of the day. It finished 1-1. They had a great second half, but Saudi Arabia was really good for the first 45. They scored first. They took the lead into the break. I think one thing that we're seeing is a lot of games with teams coming back to get results. You know, we both talked about it coming into this tournament. We thought there'd be a lot of late goals because of the conditions and because of heat and teams that press and all that sort of stuff. But I think you're seeing a lot of results get overturned because of second half goals and late goals. I'll have to update my count. I did it yesterday in the run of the show. There were 8 goals in the last 15 minutes plus stoppage time going into the day. And I believe we've seen at least one from Uruguay was late. That would be the only one today. That was after the 75th. And that was the equalizer from Maxi Araujo. I thought Saudi Arabia's goalkeeper, Alois, was excellent. He made a couple of huge saves late in that one. And it's one of those games that's weird because Saudi Arabia should be very happy with how they started. They'll be disappointed in how it finished. I think they ran out of gas. And Uruguay will be disappointed in how they started, but happy about how they finished, but not happy about the result overall, because this is a game that you thought would win and it could have taken control of the group. So every team's played 90 minutes in this group and nothing is separating the teams.
I will say, though, today's been a great games for the goalkeepers of each of these teams, honestly. I mean, it's been fun, especially from the goalkeeping side. I think it creates another situation, too. I mean, Group B's dealing with the same thing, too. Everybody's level is still in that one. Everyone got the 1-1 draw in that group. So it's kind of the same in this one, too. Everything's even, and it makes the next couple of matches in the group stage really interesting. And I think maybe some conversations you weren't necessarily thinking you'd be having after these matches.
We'll talk about one conversation that I did not expect to be having after teams played their first game. We'll talk about that here in a second.
Yeah.
But let's get everybody caught up on Iran and New Zealand. It's in the 61st, about to head into the 62nd minute. 2-1 New Zealand. And I said it coming in, and I watched the New Zealand-Haiti match in the pre-tournament friendlies, and I was nowhere any close to being impressed by New Zealand. They were better against England in their 1-0 loss, but I would have never had New Zealand scoring 2 goals in a match in this tournament. And you have to give them some credit against an Iran team that, you know, it's a crazy situation for these players. And leave the politics and things that these players have nothing to do with. Leave that to the side. It's just a crazy situation where you've had to deal with all of this in the run-up, and there's no way it could have been a normal run-up. It's a very talented Iran team, and they also responded. They conceded first, and they responded and leveled it. We'll see if they can do that again. This game's been chaotic, but New Zealand at 2-1, both goals from Elijah Just, who has been really impressive to me. He plays for Motherwell in the Scottish First Division. I've really liked his game. Both goals were good. 26 years old for Elijah Just. He's got both for New Zealand. He's on a hat trick. Could he be leading the Golden Boot by the end of the night? That would be really not on my bingo card.
Oof, that would be wild. I will say, I really like Iran. I like the way that they play. I was really impressed. Them. They're a good team, and I'm going to give my prediction, especially with the way this game ends. I think it's going to be another draw.
Wouldn't shock me at all.
How many goals? I don't know, because I could see this being crazy. Maybe we get like a 3-3 draw or something, but like, I think it's going to end in a draw. I think Iran's going to come back and is going to fight their way back in this one. I just think because of New Zealand, and I feel like how inconsistent it's been, I feel like you're gonna get an equalizer here shortly.
My takeaway, and there's your equalizer right there off the post. 2-2. Good shout. That's what happens on Atlanta Soccer tonight.
Yes. Woo!
The chaos, a great cross, an absolutely picture perfect cross. And then the header is off the inside of the post. No chance for the keeper to get to it. It's 2-2. That one was from Mohamed Moebi in the 64th minute. 2-2 out in Los Angeles in another game that has been chaotic. This tournament has been chaotic on multiple fronts with some great goals, some back and forth games, a couple of games that have gotten out of hand. Germany and Curacao, I talked about it yesterday. I think a lot of people took shots at Curacao because, yes, they gave up 7. It's not good. They did score a goal to level it, and you give them credit for that. this is a little bit of an expanded tournament where you will see some things like that happen for teams and players who have never played in a World Cup before. But what I'm seeing in this tournament is something that we talked about in the week before it got started. It feels like the gap between the teams is narrowing across the board. There's obviously outliers and these things happen, but Spain is a favorite coming in. They were held to a draw by a tournament debutant. We've seen other good teams be held into tighter games than maybe we expected. And then we saw Tunisia last night. And Sweden were awesome. And this is the crazy thing about this Swedish team. I mean, it was a party at IKEA all night long because they score five. This attack is outstanding. They were, I think, the front three went for over $300 million in transfer fees ahead of last season. Alexander Isak remembered where the goal was. That's good. He's been injured a lot. I'm being mean, but he's been injured a lot for Newcastle, for Liverpool after leaving Newcastle. I'm still being mean. And
mean to me. Stop.
I am. It was intentional. But it's a good team. It's a very good attacking team. Now, Tunisia did not look good at all. Like, no shot. And the rumor started like at this morning after I posted Morning Espresso about arguments between players and the coach and media and the coach. And there were rumors about the coach being fired after game one in the World Cup. There's reports that Federation officials were threatening to resign if he wasn't fired, Sabri Lamouchi. According to M6 and confirmed by Radio Mosaic FM, Lamouchi has been dismissed. He is no longer the coach, but this has not been made official yet. And according to Radio Mosaic FM, Harvey Renard is the leading candidate to take over this team. He's the one who was in charge of Saudi Arabia at the last World Cup and beat Argentina in the opener. He took France's women's team into the Olympics in 2024. Mm-hmm. He is a renowned manager. He's done really well with African and Asian national teams and getting teams to kind of punch above their weight. But I have never heard of a team that's going to play three games in a tournament, fire their manager after game one, and maybe have somebody come in from the outside to run the team in the other two games.
I am not going to lie to you. That was not on my 2026 FIFA bingo card. I was not expecting that at all. Because I mean, I think even what was it? I saw like a couple of things this morning and I was like, okay, like maybe. And then it kept getting more. And I said, oh no. I said, oh no, this is not happening. And I guess it is.
I guess.
I don't know. I mean, it would be absolutely wild. To have somebody come in from the outside too, to I think come in for like the next two games as well, that's insane.
It's crazy. I mean, we're going to have to wait and see what actually gets done officially. And we're about to head to break, but I'll just give you the first two things that are the top results on X when you search for Sabri Lamouchi. First one, and these are not in like time order. The first one is that he was unable to field the team that he truly wanted because certain federation members made him change his starting 11. The second one is a fight broke out at the end of the match between the coach's son and a Tunisian supporter. Security intervened and reportedly struck the supporter, who sustained minor injuries. The national team coach's son travels with the official delegation. He's been around the coaching staff, even though he's not officially part of the coaching staff. That's another one of these little elements that has probably rubbed some people the wrong way. This is what Tunisia is dealing with after a 5-1 loss to Sweden to open the tournament. Welcome to the World Cup. It's always chaotic, usually not quite this chaotic. Let's see if the 3-4-3 on the other side of the break is chaotic. We'll give you three standout performers from the day, four headlines, and three things that have made us smile as of late. All coming up on the other side of the break on Atlanta Soccer Tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
And now we end the night with a bit of structure.
Shot. Goal!
Let's get the formation set. It's the 3-4-3 on Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Welcome back, Atlanta Soccer Tonight, the 3-4-3. It's how we wrap up every show, and it's brought to you by Ford. Visit your local Ford dealer. Madison Cruz riding shotgun today. We've got three standout performers for you, four headlines, and three things that have made us smile. But I want to remind you, just in case you're new to the AST World Cup universe, which has been going nightly since May 31st, daily, nightly. It's been all over the map. It will be all over the map the rest of this week. Tomorrow, 6 to 7:40. Then Wednesday and Thursday will be 10 o'clock starts on the radio. Then Friday, it'll be a U.S. men's national team post-game show from 6 to 8. Trying to get almost every one of the shows on YouTube and those 10 o'clock starts where we sign off on radio at 11, we continue on YouTube like we're going to do tonight. We'll take some questions. We will see what shenanigans are going on around the World Cup. We'll see if we can find out more about Sabri Lamouchi from Tunisia and see if he's still got a job or not. Madison Cruz has got Panini sticker packs to open, I think.
Yes? You've opened them all. I did.
All right.
But possibly some trades because I want some players.
I gotta separate my duplicates. We have a lot of work to do on the Panini stickers, but we can talk about that. We'll talk about all that on YouTube immediately after we sign off. But we've got a 3-4-3 to get through. Let's start with the standout performers of the day. The number one standout performer has to be Vocinha from Cabo Verde. He came into the match with, I think, about 50,000 Instagram followers.
And yes, it was 50,000. And now, so here's the updated number.
Okay, hold on. Let me explain how it got updated, okay, because this is important, because this is the second time this has happened in this tournament. And the other player is playing right now for New Zealand, Tim Payne. So in Tim Payne's case, it was an Argentine streamer that's like, hey, this guy is the least known player in the tournament. Everybody go follow him. And he went from 4,000 followers to, I think he's over 4 million now. He's got more than the New Zealand national team itself. You've got Argentine clubs talking about signing him. It's chaotic. So in this case with Vocinha, it was a Brazilian streamer who actually, Kaze TV, they got the rights to broadcast the World Cup in Brazil. They got those away from Globo and the other major, like, usual channels. So Kaze TV goes on and they're like, oh, this guy's playing great. He's only got 50,000 Instagram followers. Go follow him. And now what is it?
It is 4.8 million.
Crazy. I mean, this is all nuts. real quick, just talk about what you saw from him today.
I mean, I think just class. I mean, seriously, I think it's what you get when you have an experienced keeper, I think, in a match like this. I mean, knowing the system, knowing exactly what needs to be done, especially against a team like Spain, knowing the expectation going in that, hey, you might need to be, your head needs to be on a swivel, especially against a team like Spain. And I think he handled every single moment with absolute class, with absolute just, I think also just athleticism. I think in what he was able to do. I mean, some of the saves he was having were insane. The one where he just like leapt in the air and just pushed a ball over the crossbar, I think like three times in a game. I mean, it was wild. But again, I will say, I think his leadership in the back and what he did to a lot of his communication there too. All of it doesn't work if not every single person on that field is not talking, especially in that system. And again, you just love to see the emotion and everything that happened afterwards too. I mean, you just love it. You love seeing moments like that.
Two more standout performers from the day to complete the first line of the 3-4-3. Mo Salah from Egypt. 34th birthday, he set up Egypt's goal. He's got three goal contributions in his World Cup career. Now, Egypt is still looking for their first win in a World Cup group stage ever. But Mo Salah, I mean, he's been the one getting it done for them for so long. Can he get some help? We'll find out. They got two more games to try to get that first win. And if they get that win, they're going to go into the knockout round because 4 points will be enough to get you through. Number three on the standout performers, Mohamed Alawis is the goalkeeper for Saudi Arabia. He had 9 saves. Uruguay had 28 shots in total. I think 22 of those in the second half, the most since 1974 in the World Cup. He's the reason why, because he made a couple of gigantic saves he's the reason why Saudi Arabia got a point. So two top goalkeepers. Al Owais is 34, not quite 40 years old, but two outstanding veteran goalkeepers for teams that we didn't expect would be walking away with a point today, and they did. All right, the four headlines of the day. Number one, Christian Pulisic, limited in training, but he trained, and that's important. The U.S. men's national team star, he missed the second half of the win over Paraguay, calf injury, and it's a kick. It's not a muscular strain. He had had an issue in training in the days prior where he took a knock in the calf, and then he got hit in the same spot, according to Tyler Adams. And Tyler Adams also told everybody to relax. So he was doing individual work on a stationary bike. Teammates trained normally. Pochettino said he was good. And the U.S. has got a little bit of time. They play on Friday, 3 o'clock, against Australia, who is also unbeaten in Group D. We'll have to wait and see what Pulisic's status is going to be, but I would imagine that he's going to play. And that leads me to the second headline. This is interesting because there's been a lot of talk coming into this tournament, and yes, some in the U.S. media have maybe fueled this. Australia has been dismissed by a lot of the media. I think the U.S. should win. I think they're favored in this game, and there's a reason for that. But maybe some have been a little overly strong about Australia being weak. They showed that they're not against Turkey. Their assistant coach, Hayden Fox, he said, I'm not going to tell these guys not to pay attention to what people are saying on social media. Maybe he's actually like clipping things and sending it in the group chat, because there could be a few bulletin board material things, because Turkey gave them some bulletin board material. And Nestori Irankunda, who scored the first goal for Australia, he said after the game, where Turkey's captain, Hakan Kalhanoglu, said that they were more talented, Irankunda said, it did blank off a few boys, but at the end of the day, these guys can talk all the blank. We don't really care. They might be saying the same about the U.S. media, huh?
I think so. I mean, listen, I said it on the morning shift this morning. Australia, the result shocked me, because it's not the fact that I Australia is a very talented side. I mean, they wouldn't have been in the World Cup if they weren't a talented
side. They're good. Yeah, they're good.
And it was one for me where I hadn't seen a lot of them, so I honestly just didn't know what to expect. It was one where I was just more curious what we would see from Australia. I will say, I mean, the attack that they have, I mean, it is lethal. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially, you do not want to get caught in a foot race, especially with the attack that they have. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't think that for 1 second, listen, the USA, it's one thing, I think, especially from that Paraguay matchup, you're riding high on that momentum. Now Australia is too. I do think it's going to be a battle. I think it's going to be a battle. And I don't think it's going to be an easy game. But I think, especially when you're looking at it too, with everything else, I think if the U.S. continues to click the way that they've been clicking, and I think if you continue to follow that momentum in, they should get the result against Australia. But Australia too, I mean, they're also riding on a high. I think it's a matchup where you have both teams really just driving home. They're riding off wins. It'll be an interesting one. I'm curious to see how it all falls and where things go from there.
We've got shenanigans in New Zealand and Iran. Iran trying to get something out of a collision where the guy ran face first into a New Zealand player's shoulder, which didn't end well for him, but there was not an elbow thrown. We'll talk more about this game coming to its conclusion on YouTube when we're done. Two more headlines. Neymar, he's still not training with Brazil. Draw for Brazil against Morocco in their opener. Neymar is reportedly going to get new imaging tests on his calf. He has not rejoined the team collective training. They're hoping that he'll be able to come back for game three against Scotland. They were hoping initially it was going to be game two. It's not. So it's not looking great for Neymar at the moment. Brazil needs help that goes beyond Neymar, and we'll see what they end up doing. Carlo Ancelotti's got to get that team a little bit stronger defensively, because I thought they started poorly, although they finished well, but they started poorly against Morocco. Number four, I'm excited about this, especially with our time change. I can watch the game and be completely unhinged. Argentina's debut tomorrow in Kansas City. The defending champions face Algeria tomorrow night, 9 o'clock Eastern time. Lionel Scaloni was at the stadium today for a press conference. He said the team's confident. They're in a good moment. He confirmed that Dibu Martinez with the broken fingers is going to be able to go. And Julian Alvarez is also going to be able to go. He also said directly that Spain's result today is a reminder that there are no easy opponents. He brought up Cabo Verde, brought up the Spain match unprompted. He went through it himself in the last World Cup, losing to Saudi Arabia in game one. None of these games are easy. And Argentina will get their title defense started tomorrow night at 9 o'clock. All right, three things that make us smile quickly. I'm going to start with number one, Cabo Verde. They committed just one foul in the 90 minutes against Spain. That's impressive just in and of itself. But to do that when you're defending as much as they did and to have to make some of the tackles that they did, so impressive. I'm not the one who's usually super excited about the defending, but they did a great, great job with it. Number two, I think Vocinha and just the whole story about him, and we shared a clip from the Mix Zone on Soccer Down Here. Go check that out, where he was talking about his grandparents and talking about his mom. I was doing a little bit of research. He couldn't get his mom in, unfortunately, because of kind of the late start on the visa process and also the cost of the visa process. Hopefully that could potentially change, especially if they make a knockout round game. But his story is just fascinating that he's still going at 40 years old. His dad wanted to name him after Jorge Valdano, the legendary Argentine striker. That couldn't get done for some reason with just the naming authorities or whatever in Cabo Verde. So he went with a Brazilian player, Josimar. His real first name is Josimar. And Josimar scored two of the best goals you'll ever see at a World Cup in the 1986 World Cup for Brazil, a fullback who attacked like crazy. So this guy gets named after an attacking fullback, and he ends up playing goalkeeper and has one of the most historic days. I'm going to leave number three for you, Maddie. Just the fact that all this today, the entire world was talking about something that happened in a stadium that we get to call home on a regular basis.
I will say it was really cool. I think especially for it to happen at Atlanta Stadium, a place where we go all the time for Atlanta United, for so many other big matches, and getting the chance to have that moment. I think, you know, sitting in the press box, getting to just take it in. I think I took a big deep breath before the game actually kicked off, because it was just like a wow. I know for me personally, it was a big moment. I mean, it's something I never thought would happen, and here we are. It's like, it's one where I don't think I'm going to get emotional about it yet. I think it'll hit me later on down the line, but like, not going to lie to you, like it, I don't know. Today was really cool. I think especially having that moment and that historic moment between Spain and Cabo Verde today, that was really special. That was fun.
We'll talk more about how cool it was over on YouTube. And yeah, I think it's going to hit me when all this is done after that semifinal. It's been a wild ride, and we've got seven more games coming in Atlanta. Maddie and I are going to stay on the YouTube channel for 92.9. It's youtube.com/929thegame. If you want to come in, hang out, ask us some questions, come join us. If you're catching us on the podcast, thank you. And we will be back tomorrow from 6 to 7:40 to get you caught up on everything in the World Cup. Adios, everybody.
Back to our look at the world of soccer.
And Jason Longshore has it all covered.
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
All right. Changeover done. Welcome back. It's Atlanta Soccer Tonight. Still on YouTube. Stoppage time portion of the show. We're not quite the stoppage time with Iran and New Zealand. If you're watching this along with us, it's 2-2. Maddie called the goal coming, finished her sentence, and then the goal happened. That was a new one. Never had that happen before. We got pushing. We got shoving. We've got ill tempers. We've got shenanigans. And we've got a corner for Iran here late.
All the shenanigans.
Yeah, we're into the 89th minute as Iran tries to find a winner and pushes the shot so wide it went back to the guy who took the corner. Haven't seen that one before. We saw a New Zealand player try to take a shot earlier in the match and fall down. That was kind of chaotic as well. This game's been a wild one, but it's been fun because it has been so crazy. New Zealand trying to break and a yellow card foul, which is a very smart foul. It's the 89th minute, heading into the 90th. This one's going to end in at least some kind of weird thing happening, because this game has been one whole weird thing happening. We'll take some questions on the chat if you guys have them. We'll get into that. Yeah, seriously, Ropes, she did have the magic eight ball. That's crazy.
Listen, I must say that is probably the first time that's ever happened for me. Because normally it's Jason like saying something and I'm like, nah, or like, it's like, it probably will happen now. And it does. That's the first time that's ever happened. Because I'm not going to lie to you. Like, I'm like, I was talking about it. I was like, all right, this is great. I like looked down and I saw like, because obviously with some of the apps you have, you get like the foot mob notification.
Yeah.
And I'm like looking down after I finished my thought, you're going. I see the notification. I go, no way. I go, there's no way that that just happened. And I turned and saw the goal and I went, I'm proud of myself, guys. I'm proud of myself.
It happens occasionally. Yes. Yes. I've never had one happen that quick where I've said something's going to happen.
I was not expecting that at all. Like, I was just like, because I fully just like, yeah, like they're going to find a way to equalize. They've already done it. Like, this is a team that's resilient. This is a team that's shown they can do it. So, yeah, it makes sense.
The ref just let two guys run and like yank on each other's shirt and didn't call anything.
Oh,
he's just like, ah, whatever. Fine.
Nice. Okay. Love that. I mean,
look, it's something that if you missed it, I had an interview before the tournament started with Matthew Conger, who worked in the last two World Cups. He played as a kid in Athens and then moved to New Zealand, and he reffed in two World Cups representing New Zealand and Oceania, and reffed all over the world in different leagues. But it was one of the things that came up, and I think if you really think back to World Cups, and we talk about refereeing all the time, and I told him afterwards when we were talking, I'm like, look, I try to do a better job. I get passionate like everybody else does. And I know I've complained about refereeing. And he's like, don't worry about it. Everybody does. He watches games and he complains. It happens because we all get into it and we can't see what the ref is seeing. But one of the things that really stuck with me is games get reffed different in a World Cup. I think generally less fouls are called. I think generally less cards are given. Of course, some games, and you think back to the Dutch-Portugal game in 2006, where I think you had double digits in cards. Sometimes the teams just don't cooperate, and you got to throw cards at these guys. Yeah. But I think, in general, what FIFA and IFAB want in games at this level is they want it to be consistent across the tournament. And that's hard because you got referees from different parts of the world who see things differently. Mm-hmm. But in general, I think the way they are more consistent is by being a little less whistle happy and a little less card happy. And I feel like we've seen that so far in this tournament.
I agree. I think it's been like, I feel like this is one of the first times I feel like in a while where I can say like, every match that I've watched so far, there hasn't been a moment where I've said, oh, well, that was called differently in another match. To me, I'm like, I feel like
a lot of the tournament has been consistent.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of referees have let things play out, which I like personally. I think my thing is, if you're going to call things, we talk about all the time. If you're going to do refereeing as well, I think.
Sorry, Iran's goalkeeper just pulled a dribbling move, which I was not expecting.
That was very nice. No, for me, it's one where if you're going to call it, if you're gonna be very whistle happy and you're going to make sure that every single one of those moments gets called, then yeah, do it consistently throughout the entire game. That's all I ask.
And you never want that in these kind of games.
No, you don't want it in these games. And even too, like if you're gonna be a ref that's gonna let a lot of things go, that's fine. Absolutely. Now with those types of games, you gotta know when to draw the line. That then becomes the issue, is when you have matches like that. And I feel like with this World Cup too, because we've seen a lot of matches like that, you're going to get to a point where I feel like you might have to see some of these referees starting to draw the line.
I'm actually okay. I think in general, the refereeing has been consistent so far. And I think
I'm saying more like in general, I think when you get further down, especially in the group stages, when
it's tricky though, because I think then in terms of cards, I think it gets tricky because then you don't want to throw cards, even even less than you want to throw cards right now, because when you go into a game, and this was something that Matthew and I talked about, like, I remember Geiger talking about this in MLS, and a lot of people got really bent out of shape about it, and I didn't. I get it. I think he said something about how, you know, going into a game, he knows how the teams play, and he knows what he's walking into. And Conger talked about how, like, I think he was generally on more of the, I don't need a scouting report on these teams. I just want to know, like, are they vertical? Like, are they a slow building team? Are they a fast building team? Do I need to be, like, ready to turn and sprint when the ball's on their back line? Like, that kind of stuff. Some people get really deep into it and they want to know how all the players play, and it is much more of a scouting report. However you do it, that's fine, because these are the best of the best, and they're not using that in a bad way to have all that information. They're doing that to know what they're getting into. So you get later in the tournament, you're going to know when guys are on yellow card accumulation tight ropes, and you're going to then want to throw or want to diminish throwing cards even more for silly reasons. So I think it gets even harder as the tournament goes on to throw cards. And that's if there's a difference between how games are refereed, and this one finishes 2-2. So all draws today on the board.
Wow.
If you want to get into how games at the World Cup are refereed differently than games in normal league play, I think it's the use of cards, because I think they are thrown less in these games. And I think that's a good thing with the accumulation rules and all that.
I agree.
Ropes with a comment, and Ropes, there is this. He said, I feel like there should be a refereeing boot camp for tournaments when refs come from disparate leagues. In the World Cup, there is. I don't know about, like, Copa America or the Euros or any of that, how they function. But in the World Cup, there is. And they come together, and part of it is, you know, the physical training, and there is a fitness test you have to pass, and that sort of thing. But these people have known they're in the pipeline for a while, so they're not going to come in out of shape. You know, they're coming in typically at the end of a season, not at the beginning. So that part's easy. But they talk about all the things that we talked about coming into this. The little rule changes, the you know, little variations or new things being put in, probably points of emphasis as well. And that's not something they really publicize in a huge way, but they go through all of that in the build up to the tournament. And that is something that they do to try to get everybody on the same page as best as you can with referees who all come from different backgrounds. Mm-hmm. 130 says that all the draws today in four games, it's the first time in 68 years that has happened in a day at the World Cup.
Wow. That's wild.
I mean, I'm not surprised that it's been that long. I'm surprised that we got four draws out of these games, because I did not see that coming when we walked in the door this morning.
I didn't either. Like, especially, I think, from, like, the games that we saw. Like, yeah. I feel like the Iran-New Zealand game, like, I feel like this one, like, I kind of expected Iran to come in and win.
I did too. I think they're the better team in general.
I think so too. Like, I expected them to win, especially after the draws that we did see. Belgium was a shock. Obviously, the Spain and Cape Verde game was also a shock. And then Uruguay and Saudi Arabia was the one that I actually didn't know where that one would fall, because I thought
Uruguay would handle it. I did not give Saudi Arabia enough credit. I had seen them.
I had seen enough of them to really make an opinion.
I had seen them when they were struggling, because you got to remember, like, for Saudi Arabia, they've been through a lot of managers as of late. And I saw them, and I can't remember, because I've been through so many, I can't remember the actual, like, journey that they went on. Harvey Renard started the cycle, and yes, then he was gone.
Yes, because, sorry, this is me. Hey, shameless plug, if you haven't checked out Road to 26 on SDH, you could go check that out. Basically, it's me in 48 days leading up to the World Cup. I basically just went through every single team in the tournament and gave a quick little, here's what you need to know. Yeah, Saudi Arabia, they had like a quick switch in a manager. Really, really quick, especially leading into the tournament as well.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember, because even before that, I think they had had a couple of changes, because I think because Renard had left after the 2022 cycle because he went to the France women's national team and did the Olympics in 24. And Roberto Mancini, I believe, was there at the beginning of qualifying, and then he wasn't very good, and then Renard was pretty good, and I think he got them qualified, and then had a couple of friendlies that weren't great, and then he loses his job either before the March friendlies or after. It's all kind of running together now a little bit. But I saw them in the friendlies in that, I think, after qualifying friendlies before they got to the final roster. And I was just like, this team's not that good. But what's interesting is their manager now, Georgios Donis, Greek. Really interesting the way that they play, because it's the opposite of positional play. And this would be a whole nother like hour long topic that we did not have time for tonight because I am exhausted. Positional play is something we've talked about a lot here in Atlanta. If you think Barcelona, you think Pep. Structure to give a foundation. I think Pep and some others lean in different scales of how much structure and how rigid it is. I went through the Dutch conversation last night about how you've got the Johan Cruyff era of the Dutch, where it's very wide open and total football. And then you have the Louis van Gaal era, which was very rigid, and guys basically have like very specific jobs and responsibilities. Donis is of the relationism idea. So he doesn't care where you are on the field in totality. Of course, he's got ideas of who's a defender and who's a midfielder and who's a forward. But the players have the freedom to go combine. Relationism is about players adapting to what happens in the game. And if that means like four guys are in a very similar spot on the field, but they can use that to their advantage, great. So yeah. It's not quite like the Matias Almeida man-to-man defending that you would see him do with San Jose back in the day. Some other coaches have done that. But it's a lot closer to that than a very structured team. And it feels like now it's started to click. But the thing was today, as good as they were in the first half, they were overrun just as hard in the second half. So can they play the way that their manager wants them to do for more than 30, 40 minutes and be effective? We're going to find out in the next two games. But I didn't think they had that kind of a start in them. I just didn't think they were capable of that.
And you tell me if I'm wrong, actually, because it's one where like, I was curious, especially like reading up a little bit too. I feel like isn't that the way, especially for Brazil, they kind of want to play too, where it's a little bit more of it's a
they kind have of, in the past. Like yeah. This is it's interesting because Carlo Ancelotti comes in to be more structure. I've always called you just 130 just because 130 was easy. And I just you pick the first three letters. But Homer, there we go. Cool. I need to use that more. All right. Appreciate it, Homer. So Brazil in general has leaned more relationism, and you've got some managers in Brazil who have gone more that way, where it's more freedom. But Ancelotti was brought in to actually provide structure, somewhat, at least on the defensive side. I think they would probably like the Brazilian national team in this cycle to be half and half, structured defensively, and then free in the attacking half. And that's a really tough balance to strike, but they would love for that to happen. And
especially with what you have to listen. And I think like, especially defensively too, Marquinhos is one of my favorite players right now. I think especially with what he brings in those areas, I just feel like, especially with Brazil, it's like, you haven't seen that at all. Like, I mean, you kind of saw it, but like, I don't know if it's like, it hasn't like fully clicked.
I just don't think he's got a good enough defense. Honestly, yeah. I just don't think they have a good enough defense, and that's going to be their undoing unless Ancelotti can become a miracle worker. Ropes, yeah, it is. And Bielsa isn't a typical positional play guy. He interprets it differently. Like, we could do this whole coaching family tree kind of thing that would actually be kind of fun at some point, maybe after the World Cup and before the European seasons get started. although Atlanta United will then be in full swing with multiple games a week and it'll be chaos. But maybe we'll find a time to do this, maybe in the off season, where it's like you go through the idea of positional play models and you have the Johan Cruyff total football wide open, yes, wanting to stretch teams out and not have guys on top of each other, but being able to adapt, versus the Louis van Gaal, very rigid. If you are in this role, you are in this role. And then if you interchange, you have to interchange for a longer period of time, but it has to be structured. Then you have the South American like interpretation of it. It's like how the Argentines pizza is a little bit different than it is in the US and in Italy, because put their own spin on it. And that's what you kind of get with the Argentine positional play. And I think what happened with somebody like Pep is Pep played for Cruyff and he worshiped him. Cruyff felt the way that he wanted the game to be played and coached, but he wasn't great at like writing it down and creating a book. Like, he was very much on feel. Pep, when he was learning to coach and interested in it, he wanted some kind of basically like a textbook. He wanted to be able to make this something that you could repeat and build upon. Bielsa, because he's not playing for Cruyff or being around that, he's an ocean away, he's having to study it and write it down and create structure to it to try to interpret it in his way. So when Pep met Bielsa and is like, oh, you've watched this from afar and this is how you see it. Oh, it kind of makes sense now. Like, I get it in the way that I can write it down and explain it to somebody rather than just, I feel it and this is what you do.
I get you.
And that's where it all started to, that's where you get the third way. And Bielsa was the third different way out of Argentina, because there it was much simpler in terms of their two great coaches were Cesar Luis Menotti, who won the 78 World Cup. Totally wide open attacking soccer. That's what he wanted. La Nuestra. It's all about getting as many numbers forward as possible, get forward and attack and win. Then Carlos Bilardo was the opposite. Very defensive, very cynical. He came from the Estudiantes school where they would, I think they admitted to this, so I don't think I have to say allegedly, they would actually like have little pins that they would like prick opponents with in the 60s and 70s to throw them off. They were called the pincharatas because of that. Yeah. Yeah.
What? Oh,
yeah. 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 I'll have to school you up on Bilardo, because he's crazy.
That's wild.
Yeah. Yeah. He's crazy. He is absolutely crazy.
That's insane.
But then, and Maradona kind of like went through the two of them. He played a little bit for Menotti when he was very, very young and he worshiped Menotti, but then Menotti didn't pick him for the 78 World Cup when he was 17 years old. So he was furious. Then he played for Bilardo and he was his captain, and Bilardo had to give up the structure to let Maradona be Maradona and go play and just own the world basically.
Yeah.
So Bielsa comes in with kind of a semi-academic look at the game from a coaching perspective rather than go attack or go defend. And he's like, well, you can do both. So in Argentina, you have like three different ways, and coaches who come up are like, I could go that way, I could go this way, I could go that way.
You can do both. You can if you want.
And that's the same with positional play. And then you've got the gegenpressing guys that have elements of positional play. And you do still have some of the outdated English coaches who are like, hoof it.
As Hannah Montana once said, you get the best of both worlds, you know?
She did. It's true.
She did say that. She did say that.
My TikTok algorithm went nuts when they did the 30th anniversary thing of Hannah Montana. So
she put on that wig, and
the
20th
anniversary, I think.
20th. That was wild. She put on the blonde wig. I freaked out.
I saw all the clips. I can't say I knew anything about the show, but yes, I saw all the clips. So it was very emotional. Very emotional watching it. Yes.
Oh my gosh.
These are the things that happen. What are you knowing?
No, I was watching Saudi Arabia and Uruguay, the highlights, and I feel so bad. They showed a fan like with like it was like a dad with his like younger like baby like holding like after like Uruguay scored. And I think the noise was just really loud, so the baby started crying, but the dad's like, yeah.
Sorry, like, oh, kid.
No. It's like, sorry.
Kids got to learn sometime.
You're being cultured. Let me show you the World Cup.
it got loud at the bins today. It got loud when Yamal checked in. It got loud when he got on the ball the first couple of times.
Yes.
But then it was just so funny how it turned. And it didn't turn for everybody because it was, I mean, I don't know. We haven't even talked about this. And I haven't seen anybody try to guesstimate it. Maybe 75-25 in terms of Spain Cabo Verde fans.
Honestly, like, I'm not going to lie to you. I feel like a lot, like, yes, there were a lot of Spain fans there. Mm-hmm. I feel like there was a lot of more neutral than anything else. Like,
I don't think there were more neutral than there were Spain fans. I think there were more Spain fans than any of the three, since we're everything's in threes tonight. I think there were more Spanish fans than any other category. There might have been more neutrals than Cabo Verde fans, but there were a lot of Cabo Verde fans.
There were a ton. There were a lot more than I thought.
For such a small country, there were a lot. And I thought there would be, but even still, it was more than I thought. But what was cool was, of course, the Spanish fans. I mean, they weren't cheering for Cabo Verde. They got frustrated with their team, and you could hear it.
Yes.
And it was very evident a few times. And then it immediately flipped to then support. And Spanish football culture, it's different. It is a little unique compared to some others that we've had the chance to experience. But the neutrals, even the ones that maybe went in rooting for Spain, definitely by like the 85th minute were turning to Cabo Verde and they were joining into the chants and the cheers. And it got really loud with the plays that Cabo Verde made late.
Oh, yeah. Because I mean, Cabo Verde had a couple of like quick runs, especially on the counter. And like, and it's again the conversation for Cabo Verde in the group stage. I feel like, with the way that their system is it works really well right now. When you get to the knockout, you got to find a way, I think, to find the back of the net. And
yeah,
that's
going to be limited.
That's going to be the question mark. I think I'm curious to see, especially that matchup in Miami, maybe how that works. And like, maybe that obviously might be the conversation is going into this week. Cause it's like, hey, that's something we got to work on. It's like, hey, y'all delivered the defensive performance of a lifetime. We got it. That's great and all, but we do have to find somebody who can, you know, find the back of the net.
I mean, I don't think you can work on it. I think they're just limited. I think it's just a talent thing. I mean, when you start to look at the differences between the level of player, and Cabo Verde is better than people gave them credit coming in, because people don't know where it is. They've never heard of it. So they're like, oh, they're bad. No, they've got multiple players who have a lot of MLS experience. They've got players who play in good leagues in Europe, and then they've got some who don't. And
Morera played. He played with Columbus Crew.
He still does. Yeah, Steven Morera plays for Columbus. Jamiro Montero played for Philadelphia and San Jose. You've got players who play at a good level, but you don't have many of them, and that's the difference. And I think Cabo Verde's best players are their defensive players. So that's fine. Like, this is normal with an underdog. I think the thing about underdogs in tournaments like this, the underdogs who can defend are going to go further than the underdogs who can't, because what separates the best teams in the world, and I know the adage and I know the cliche about defense wins championships. I don't think it does in this sport. I really think what separates the teams, I agree with you, Ropes. I think there were a lot of neutrals who wore Spanish gear, but I think there were a lot of Spanish fans there too. I ran into a bunch of them in South Downtown before the game. It was very cool seeing them march all the way up, and a lot of people from Spain made the trip over because you got two games in the same place.
That's awesome. That's cool. But
I think the difference when you look at a Cabo Verde, their best players are defensive. Okay. You look at a couple other, like Greece in 2004 when they won the Euros, their best players were goalkeeper and defenders. If you're an underdog who can defend, you can grind out a result and you can frustrate the other team. frustrating the other team and grinding out a result doesn't go win you a game. The difference between the underdogs and the good underdogs. I mean, if you're an underdog who comes in and your best player is an attacker, but nobody else can play at that same level, you're not going to go as far as a Cabo Verde, because your best player being an attacker is not Lamine Yamal or Lionel Messi or Cristiano Ronaldo or any of those great players.
Yeah.
Your best player for a team like this is a guy who wouldn't start on the other teams.
Yeah.
But if you've got a group of good defenders, you can create something out of that.
I feel like, I will say though, like if Cabo Verde, and I do agree with you, after seeing the performance, I totally could see them making it to the knockout.
I thought they could defend well enough to get to the knockout round for sure.
I think when you get to a knockout, I feel like depending maybe on the opponent, I feel like Cabo Verde could be the team. And I really do. I think they're the only team that could maybe take it where they could just play that way and take it all the way to a penalty shootout.
No, they could do. No, that happens. But the thing is, but go to Costa Rica in 2014. Like Costa Rica did that and they punched above their weight, and they had a great goalkeeper in Keylor Navas when he was younger, and had Brian Ruiz, who was very good, and they had a good defensive group. Yeah. So they got out of their group. They got through a round of 16 game, I think, on penalties, and then they lost in penalties to the Dutch. And because when you're relying on penalties or a set piece or converting one of your four chances in the game, you're buying lottery tickets and you're hoping.
Yeah.
When you're a good team, you're going out and winning the game yourself. Yes. And I think that's the difference. And that's what separates these teams the further you go. So I think if we want to make a new cliche, defending can get you out of the group stage. Good defending gets you out of the group stage. Good attacking wins you the World Cup.
Yeah.
There's your cliche.
I like it.
That's how I feel.
Get it on the t-shirt now.
Now we might. Well, we can't use World Cup. We'd get yelled at for that one. We can't do that. We definitely don't have the rights, and we can't pay for the rights, and we don't have the lawyers either. So no, we're not going to do that one. What other things have been going on that we should talk about real quick before we go? Because it's been a long day. Some cool stuff coming. The Brewhouse Cafe in South Downtown is going to open on Wednesday officially. Got a chance to stop by this morning as they were putting some finishing touches on the place. Saw some very familiar pictures, which was very cool. Saw some cool stuff. It's a great spot. Highly recommended when you're going to games. It was perfect because I wanted to go to South Downtown, one, because places have started to open and I love what they're doing with the development. I wanted to get some coffee this morning and I knew Spiller Park Coffee was there, and I'm like, perfect. I can go to South Downtown, see what the vibe is like the first match day that it's open. Casa España is right there as well. And I was like, I'll maybe see the fan march or whatever. This is all good. And I caught the tail end of that, but there were Spanish fans everywhere. Casa España looks cool. I want to go check it out and see what all is going on in there. But that area is 5-minute walk from the Five Points MARTA station. I think it's about the same from the Garnett station. You've got that happening. You've got Centennial Yards happening. Our buddy Kevin Egan, his bar is open to the public now. That's another spot, Irish Exit, to check out before games, after games, during the World Cup, after the World Cup. You're going to Hawks game, you're going to Atlanta United game, you're going to a concert. That's a cool spot in Centennial Yards. More places are opening up there too. Cosm is open now. Like that whole area now, it's going to be great for the World Cup, but we're there 20 times a year with Atlanta United and Falcons games and Hawks games and concerts. Now that whole area of Atlanta is so different. It's awesome.
I'm excited, not gonna lie to you, after some United games, getting the chance to like maybe walk on over.
Yes, after some United games, I definitely need a beer. I'm not gonna lie.
No,
hopefully we have less of those. And it's a different kind of beer after. I still might want a beer, but it's a different kind of mood for the beer.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes.
No, and even like for the World Cup too, it's awesome. It's really exciting. I will say, I do want to switch the conversation to the Panini stickers because I have to.
Go ahead and switch it.
I now understand, like, so my roommate.
You're obsessed.
my roommate is like baseball cards. Like she's a big baseball person. So like I never really understood it. Now yeah. I get it. I understand it now. I understand it. And now I'm fully addicted. This is bad.
You're getting antsy. Like you want to open a pack right yes. now. You're thinking about like packs, going to the store.
I don't have any packs. So I can't like do anything. I'm like, I don't know what to do with my life. And now it's like, I really want to complete this whole book now. Cause like, it's going to kill me if I can't.
It's a lot to complete. It's like 900 something stickers.
I know. Listen, here's my calling card, guys. I want Chris Richards. I want Marquinhos. I want Hakimi. If anyone can make this happen, this would be great. I just want to let y'all know. I also got some trades too. Like I'll compile them together. I'm going through my duplicates right now. I do have a duplicate of Christian Roldan if anybody is interested.
I think I have a duplicate of Roldan as well.
But I am looking for Chris Richards.
I don't have a duplicate there.
I will say I got the cool little I'm on the US right now because I was putting some stuff down. I got like the Balogun with like it's like the orange, I think, outline.
Oh, you got an orange Balogun. Well, now it's not worth anything because you put it in the book, but
well, it's mine. I'm not taking it out. It's mine.
But there are if you get one that has like the shiny background.
Don't put that sticker in there. That ain't being stuck. I'm selling that.
if you get the orange one, can be worth some. Those are more rare. The blue ones are pretty common. Rope's got a blue Messi, which I don't have the Messi period. So like I'm mad at all of y'all. But the blue ones are fairly common. The orange ones, I think out of the 50 pack box, I got two orange. So they're pretty rare. I haven't seen any other colors. Some of the colors are country specific, so that's kind of weird. That's the thing that where they get you with this, because it's twofold with the stickers. Like one, you want to complete the book, so you get obsessed that way. But then the baseball card side of it kicks in too, where they do these like limited cards, these special edition cards, these variants of cards that are rare and worth more, and you're like, oh, I want to get one of those. Because the one of one cards, like there, if you get an Mbappe or a Messi one of one, like that's worth tens of thousands of dollars, it's extremely rare. It's like winning a lottery ticket.
Well, it's like the ones obviously with like the foil, like in the background. And
there's those, there's the black one of ones. And then if there's other color variants in the US, which I don't know, I haven't seen them yet.
I haven't seen them either. I've only seen the outline of like the ones.
That's
like
what that's the ones.
Purple. Yeah.
Blue and orange are the only ones I've literally seen. That's the only ones I got out of the 50 pack box that I did. There are other outline colors, but some of them are only in certain parts of the world.
I got so many duplicates. I do have
is that a red?
I believe it's like an orange. The orange? Valverde for Uruguay.
Yeah, I got an orange. It looks a lot lighter than that of Kufal from Czechia. So Kufal is red. And then the orange one I got is Courtois from Belgium.
I get you.
So I did get a red. So I got one orange and one red out of the 50 count box. So
I will say,
it's all hard to judge because I think the variants in terms of baseball cards, variants are priced out and you know what they're worth and they get graded and all that. Stickers are not quite the same because not as many people collect them for that reason. They collected to put it in the book.
Yeah.
So it's a whole, like I've seen some of the variants go for like $100 and I've seen some of the variants go like, at least they're priced at like $10,000. So
No, it's interesting.
Roach, I got a Yamal off the Coke label. Somebody gave it to me.
I have Lamine Yamal and Weston from the Coke bottle.
Okay.
That's what I got right now.
There's like eight of those you got to get to complete the book.
Ten of them.
Ten. Good grief. You're obsessed.
And I do know because it's bad. It's really bad. My roommate, I did tell her about this. I said, I understand the obsession with baseball cards now. She goes, so why aren't you going to CVS right now and getting another pack so you can open it?
I kind of expected you would before the show tonight.
I said, don't encourage me. But here's the thing. I do have to run errands tomorrow.
You're going to get some.
I'm probably going to get some. Like, I'm going to just say it. I'm probably going to get some.
Yeah, and you will.
Yeah, I will say, though, I do have a Virgil van Dijk.
I got Van Dijk. Yeah, yeah.
I got Van Dijk. If anybody wants that, I have a duplicate.
Okay.
I have it.
Ropes had a duplicate. Kyle Larin and Nico Williams.
Oh, I think I have both of those.
I'm pretty sure I have both. I might not have Larin. That's the one I'm not positive off the top of my head.
I will say I'm on the USA page right now and I'm looking at it. I want Chris Richards. I got to get Christian Pulisic. Malik Tillman. The ones for USA, I don't have the USA emblem, like that one.
I got that. I don't think I have a duplicate there.
I don't have that one. I'll tell you the ones that I do have. I almost have completed all the US. I have Matt Freese, Christian Roldan, Timothy Weah, Diego Luna, unfortunately. Sad. Tim Ream, Mark McKenzie, Alex Freeman, Tyler Adams, Tanner Tessman, Weston McKinney. Then I have Haji Wright and Florin Balogun.
See, I need to get some more packs because now, like, when the tournament gets going, you get players in the pack and you're like, oh, like the last pack that I opened, I got Giovanni Cabral from Cabo Verde, who I really like today. He was seven on the wing, and the other Cabral unrelated was 13 as the left back. And I thought the two of them were really good on that left side.
The man of the match for today
for
Cabo Verde.
Not bad. Not bad.
Him. So
the last pack I got Zion Suzuki from Japan, the goalkeeper who I really liked.
He was very good.
And then I sadly got Takefusa Kubo, who was injured in the game yesterday, and they're waiting to see what his status is. Oh. So you get, like, that's what's cool during the tournament when you open a pack and you're like, oh, I saw that guy play. He was really good. Or, oh, that guy, you know, he got hurt. Or that guy got a red card. Or that guy scored a hat trick. Like, you get those kind of stories going in it too. So
yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a ton of fun. Yeah, I'm very happy that I did pull. I actually pulled him today. Vozina. I pulled him today, like as I got the pack, and I went, this is amazing. So that was very exciting. No, I'm having a great time. There's nothing else I'd rather be doing, honestly. This is great. I'm honestly, like, I'm having a great time.
I need to get some more packs. I need to get my book, because my book that I ordered from Amazon, like, got delayed, and then it was going to get delayed again. I'm like, just cancel it. I'm going to get a hardcover book now. So now I'm obsessed. I'm going to get a hardcover book.
Just go to Costco.
I don't have a Costco card.
Force Sophia to take you to Costco.
Okay.
Sophia has a Costco card. That's why I say it, because she took me, and that's where I got mine.
All right. Well, that might be the way that I do it.
Grab dinner, and then I said, I want the hardcover. She said, well, I have a Costco card. I said, let's go. And I did. And I walked out of it holding the box like this to my chest. I said, yes, this is great. And so, yeah, now here we are.
Oh, boy. Yay. I did get my Thiago Almada Argentina jersey, so I'm very excited about that.
Oh, that's sick.
Ropes asked where I'm watching the game. I don't know yet, because I wasn't expecting to be able to, because I was going to be doing the show. I mean, I would have been watching it and reacting to it and losing my mind on the radio and trying not to have any FCC violations. But now, because Georgia lost and they play at 7:40 in the College World Series, instead of being 10 to 11 on radio and then after, now... tomorrow I'm 6 to 7:40. So I'm done with an hour and a half to spare for the Argentina game. I'm probably just going to go to the brew house because it's down the street.
Fair enough. Honestly.
Yeah,
I'm in Kessel, so I could.
I think Sophia actually has her parents might have the Costco account, but she's got her own card.
Yes.
Yes. Her parents might help her with the Costco one. I don't know the family. I don't have Costco. Like I had Sam's Club back in the day because there was a Sam's Club close to me. Like, I don't have a Costco really close to me, so I don't even know the process.
I also feel like from other people that I know, like, you can get on like a family plan. I think that's
I thought you could get like a group or a family thing. So
honestly, I'm shocked my mother hasn't gotten one. Like, I honestly, and I'm not even saying that like for the sole reason of like, oh, wow, the Panini stickers are there. I'm actually saying this. I've been saying it for years. Like, I'm like, how do you not have one?
Costco people are very much a people. Like, that is a thing. That is a lifestyle.
The only reason I say this is because it's a family of six of us. It's my mom, my dad, I'm the oldest, and then I have three other siblings. So, like, I kind of just assumed, yeah, you probably would be going to Costco because, you know, we're probably eating her out of the house, basically.
That makes sense.
So, like, I just was shocked that it never happened. And she was like, I don't know, I'm just...
I had Sam's Club because we were close to one, and it was, I mean, Sam's Club is, you know, it's attached to Walmart. So, like, it was kind of the same idea. There were a couple other ones that tried and came and went, and then Costco started showing up and has taken over.
Yeah. So, I will say, though, the chicken bake from Costco, so good.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like, there's people that I talk to who are Costco people, and they will come up with like a million different things. They're like, this is great at Costco. And I'm like, okay, this, like, I didn't expect that one to be great there too, but I guess it is.
Costco is like, I don't go often, but when I do go, it's really great, especially for like frozen stuff. Cause I can get a whole frozen stuff in like a pack. And then like, I don't have to buy it like for months. It's great.
Yeah.
I also go, yes. And their food, like going out, like
that's what I've heard.
My roommate has it one with her family, and I literally be like, so are we grabbing dinner? And she's like,
we're going to Costco.
Yes. And we go to Costco and we'll just get food because everything there's great. So yeah, it's kind of wild.
This is what happens on a World Cup show. Sometimes we start talking about Costco because it goes from stickers to food at Costco,
but it's cheap. That's why. And I'm, you know, I graduated college 2024. I'm broke.
I know. I freelance everything. So trust me, I know all about it. Couple things before we go. Please go visit soccerdownhere.net. We've got articles about the game today. I got a long view column, which I usually do for Atlanta United games, where I go into the stats and then go into the post-game press conferences and then give kind of how I saw the game too. And it all meshes together to create a column. That is up. The game column is up. On our Instagram page, the photo reel from Sofia Cupertino is up, and she killed it today. Maddie's got a video up about the game. So we were all over the opener here in Atlanta in multiple different ways. There'll be more in Morning Espresso tomorrow. Make sure you are subscribed. It's free. It's a newsletter. It's in your email box every morning before 10. This morning it was really early because I left really early. But typically during the World Cup, it's in there before 10. It'll get you everything you need to know if you missed a game the day before, or if you want to know what's coming up that day, any other crazy news stories. We'll see if Tunisia's got a coach tomorrow. There's reports that Harvey Renard could be joining the team in the next day or two. I guess he's got a visa and can just come on in, but who knows? All of that on soccerdownhere.net. And tomorrow we will be here from 6 to 7:40. I will be. I think I'm going to be able to rope Madison in for some of the show tomorrow, hopefully. Peer pressure.
Sure.
Let's, I guess it. That worked. All right. 6 to 7:40. So we will get you caught up on the games tomorrow. We'll preview Argentina because that's a massive story. We'll have, what do we have before that? I think it's France.
France and Senegal.
France and Senegal is before that. And then we get Norway and Iraq as well, I believe. Like, it's an interesting day, if I'm not mistaken.
Also one I'm circling.
France Senegal will be a very good one. That is at
3 o'clock.
Iraq Norway is at 6, and Argentina Algeria is at 9, and then for the sickos, Austria and Jordan at midnight.
I'm doing it. Let's do it.
Depends on how the Argentina game goes.
YOLO.
Depends on how the Argentina game goes. If it's
World Cup is every 4 years.
It's true. It's true. Yeah. If the Argentina game's spicy, the Fernet might kick in, and I might call it a night early. So we'll see. But I did get my Thiago Almada Argentina jersey. That is in. So I'm very excited about that. I will more than likely be headed to the brew house for that one because I can get there quickly. I'll have to see if Umberto can get me some Fernet and Coke on standby. I'll be ready to go. But we'll be here from 6 to 7:40 tomorrow, Thursday, 10 o'clock, barring any other reschedules, which is possible. Friday, the U.S. play at 3 o'clock. There are viewing parties and things going on everywhere. the FIFA Fan Festival, Decatur Watch Fest. I know there's a bunch of other public viewing parties, some that were going last Friday as well, some new ones. Everybody else is jumping on the bandwagon. Our friends up at Nofo Bruco in Gainesville and in Cumming are both doing watch parties for the game. I think you're going to one of those, right?
I am. Me and my family will be at Nofo in Cumming.
That's going to be chaos. That's actually a great place to watch soccer. There is a very loyal soccer base that go to that Nofo Bruco, specifically because they are on the front of the shirt for Walsall, and there's a big Walsall contingent to go there.
I have the soccer down here lager.
Soccer down here lager. Yeah. Yes. You had it on tap at the brew house. You haven't had it in cans.
On tap at the brew house. The cans is what I'm really excited about. So I'm very pumped about that.
Yes, they are very cool. That is available, a limited run. Hopefully they go really well and it becomes a less limited run next time. That'd be amazing. All the things World Cup related the rest of the week. And in the weekend, I think it's 9 to 11, both Saturday and Sunday. And I just feel like this tournament is like an onion that you can peel every day. And we're getting into all these different layers of it now. With now, okay, we got two groups that are all, everybody's at one point.
Did you just say Shrek? Like, that is
literally... I wasn't trying to. I would just literally like, was trying to think of something with layers.
That's definitely just a line from Shrek, the movie.
It's a Shrek line? Oh, cool. I mean, I did not know it. I have not seen Shrek in forever, so... I'll take it. I mean, that's not bad to be quoting Shrek by accident. That's not too bad.
Not at all.
But yes, the World Cup is like an onion. It has layers to it. And we're getting deeper into it now because we have groups that have everybody tied. We have the U.S. group where two teams are on three and two teams are on zero. And one of the teams that's on three we didn't expect. And we've got some surprise stories from a good thing. We've got some surprise stories from a bad thing. And I feel like every day... the overall narrative keeps going in slightly different directions. Yes. So by the time we get to this weekend, who knows what we're going to be talking about? I mean, we haven't had a ref controversy. We haven't had a VAR controversy. No. We've had a coach allegedly get fired. We haven't had a hat trick yet.
I shouldn't say anything because I did, in fact, have the magic eight ball to do this. So maybe I should just not jinx anything.
Don't jinx anything.
Happens.
Don't do it. We'll just see what happens. Sure. I don't know if your magic eight ball is that good. You got one.
Either. I got lucky.
You got one on a day where every game ended in a draw for the first time in like 68 years, according to Homer. Last point. I mean, I kind of agree with you. I think at times, Homer, maybe the way the tournament's gone over the last few years, the first games feel a little cagey and a little tighter and maybe like a little easier to pull an upset in game one because of the unknown factor with some teams. Teams will start to separate themselves over these next couple of games. Like everybody will get their first game in the books. I think Thursday is the last day for teams playing their first game. Yeah, that'll be the last one. Thursday, we will have a quadruple header with Portugal, DR Congo, with England, Croatia, Ghana, Panama, Uzbekistan, Colombia. And then Friday, we get to the second games, match day two. And that's where we'll start to see separation.
This Thursday, it's Czechia.
Wednesday. Sorry, I don't know what day it is.
You're good.
Wednesday is the last day of the match day ones. Dates don't mean anything anymore. It's just like, what's tomorrow? Okay, cool. So Wednesday, the 17th, is the last day of match day ones. And then Thursday, we start to get match day twos. And we'll be back at the bins for Czechia and South Africa. We got to preview that. We have so much stuff coming. It's nonstop. We are 2 weeks into our World Cup adventure. Woo. And there's a whole lot more to come. So thank you for being part of it. Thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. We're going to sign off because we're delirious. We'll be back with you tomorrow, 6 to 7:40. Adios, everybody.